Much better. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Customarily before the Dhamma teaching, reflections, it's just the person who's speaking who recites the Namo Tassa. I appreciate your enthusiasm to join in, but that particular one is a solo. Once again, I'm very happy indeed to be here at IMS. I first started leading retreats here back in the 90s, mid-90s, and I've done quite a few events here, also at BCBS over the years, and so it's been a long gap since the last retreat I led here was in the May of 2010, just before I moved to England to take up the role of abbot at Amaravati. So I realized I couldn't ride two horses at once, and trying to keep a catalogue of retreats I was leading over here, as well as trying to lead the monastery over there, was not going to work. So I made a resolution, okay, I wouldn't accept any invitations to lead retreats here in the US, and would just concentrate on the monastery in England. It's quite a large place as a resident community of about 45 monastics, nuns and monks, novices, and about 10 long-term lay resident people, and about 20, 25 guests. So it's a big family. And so that was my resolution. But then we have a big building program going on, and our own retreat center has been largely shut down for a couple of years. So I accepted the invitation from Guy and Sally, and also then Greg, to consider coming to this to the US and lead some retreats once again. So I was happy to agree to that, and here we are. So there's also a few people have been asking, does this retreat have a theme or a title? Monastic retreat was my response. That's it. That's the theme. As is the case in most of these occasions, some themes and areas come up on their own according to the season and the different issues that arise, or particular things that people are interested in their Dhamma practice. So we'll see how things evolve in an organic way over the next 10 days. We teach, lead retreats on a variety of themes. Sometimes they are given a title, and sometimes they're more informal, like this. But almost invariably, there's a couple of principles I like to highlight, irrespective of any official theme that an event has. And the first is to establish an attitude of being ready to learn from everything. This is very much a principle that Venerable Ajahn Chah, who taught here at IMS in 1979, that he would emphasize over and over again, that if we are wise, then everything will teach us, whether it's the voices from up on the platform and the formal meditation practice, or whether it's the process of washing the dishes, or having twisted your ankle and having to walk around on a stick, whatever it might be, whether it's expected or unexpected, formal or informal, if we're wise, everything will teach us. Our bodies, our moods, the weather, the people that we're sharing the space with, everything will be our teacher if we let it. if we're not wise, then even if you had the Buddha himself sitting up here explaining everything in great detail, then it wouldn't do us much good. So I do like to encourage that, setting that as an intention, rather than thinking of the practice going well or going badly, if it fits your expectations and your wishes or it goes against your expectations and your wishes, instead of judging our say, sense of progress or degeneration in those familiar or habitual ways, instead, rather than thinking, oh, that was a good meditation, or that was an awful meditation, or I really lost it, or I'm really getting somewhere, to instead change the framework. And if things are going really well, there's a great clarity and peacefulness and blazing insights are popping up at regular intervals, rather than then labeling it, oh, I'm really getting somewhere, my practice is going well, to take a step back and consider, okay, well, this is one pattern of experience. What is there to be learned from this? And when it's the opposite, when the mind is filled with confusion and doubt and rage and dullness, what they call the multiple hindrance attack, I believe. They have four or five of the hindrances all going at the same time. Rather than thinking that's a terrible meditation, it's a waste of time, I'm a useless meditator, instead to take a step back and consider, what can we learn from this? What is this teaching? And in this way, if we consciously work at creating a framework of this nature, then nothing can go wrong. Even if you have an emergency call that comes through and you have to leave the retreat or leave the country, or go off to hospital. I've had that experience before where somebody had to have a serious, I'm not suggesting this might happen or should happen, we to wish for it, but it was autumn weather, it was very misty and cool, and this fellow on the retreat in California had a major angina attack. We whisked off to the hospital in Santa Rosa, had a heart operation, and was back on the retreat by Friday. Several of his partner and a couple of other people from his group did some sittings in the hospital with him, and he was back on the retreat on the Friday. So that was not the retreat he was expecting, but still, it was a great learning experience. So I do heartily encourage that kind of setting that attitude in place to the extent that we can. And a partner to that, the other principle that I like to encourage at the very beginning is to be seeing that the way that we can say form that attitude, that framework, is to create a ground of loving kindness. Oftentimes we think of metta bhavana, metta practice, as a sort of like a little extra kind of formal meditation that we do once in a while, or that it's systematized in terms of particular recollections. You know, may I be happy, may all beings be happy, and then going through lists of beings, either geographically or through classes of beings, and that kind of metta practice can be very valuable. But what I mean by establishing a ground of metta is really the heart of acceptance, of openness. And so that this is something that Ajahn Sumedho has emphasized a lot over the years, that when we talk about loving kindness, we can mistake it for meaning trying to make ourselves like everything. And those of you who've read his books or listened to his talks, you'll know over and over again he'll say, loving is not the same as liking. We can't make ourselves like the unlikable. If something is painful or bitter, or something is unskillful, unwholesome, we're not trying to make ourselves like it, like a three-day headache or a twisted ankle or a crisis in our family. We can't like it. We can't like the unlikable, but we can be open-hearted towards it. But whether I like it or not, here it is. The twisted ankle, the family crisis, the three-day headache. Oh, another day of raging headache. Okay, here it is. So I feel that getting a sense for that quality of open-heartedness is very, very important. One way that I like to describe this is to consider that metta has two aspects to it. Like the breath is composed of the in-breath and the out-breath. I would say that the practice of metta is twofold. So often when we talk about loving kindness or the practice of loving kindness, we emphasize the expressive part of it, radiating kindness over the entire world, as we were just reciting, that outgoing quality. But just like the breath, the out-breath is part of the cycle, but the most important part of the breath is taking the oxygen in. It's the receptive aspect of the breath. It brings the oxygen, the life-giving oxygen into the body, and then the expression is the out-breath is a result of that. So similarly, with loving kindness, I feel the real heart of metta is a radical acceptance. That's the kind of language I like to use. Radical acceptance, that whether we like it or not, here it is. In this moment, it's exactly this way. So it's that profound open-heartedness to the feelings of the body, the people around us, the states of mind that are here. And if there is that ground of loving-kindness, of acceptance, then on the basis of that acceptance, here it is, then that creates a space whereby we can give guidance to our practice, that we can recognize the wholesome and follow it and support it. We can recognize the unwholesome, the confusing, the painful, and learn to let go of it. So another of the themes that I have in more recent years been stressing a lot and emphasizing is when many of us have been doing practicing meditation, listening to instruction, either in a retreat or with a teacher, or giving instructions in the role of being a teacher for years and years and years. And it's very easy to pick up the process of meditation, the formal exercises of sitting or walking meditation, with an I should sit up straight, I should concentrate my mind, I should let go of my chattering thoughts, I should be establishing an open-hearted attitude. Yeah. I should, yeah, I must, I have to get rid of this, I have to get hold of that, I need to become this, and I have to abandon that. And then if we look at the words of the suttas and the texts or the Dhamma teachings, it's like, well, yeah, it's full of all of that, Ajahn, so what's the problem? But and maybe we'll explore this a bit more during these days, but the more that we establish our effort and directionality in practice on self-view, like, I want to be this way, I don't want to be that way, I should do this, I should get rid of that. If the practice of meditation and the directionality, the direction that we give, the intention that we set is based on self-view, and the effort that we make following that intention is based on self-view. Like, I am cultivating concentration. I am developing insight. You know, I am letting go of dullness and distraction. Then the degree to which there's self-view in the mix, and that is right there, is creating more stress, more dukkha, more alienation, more imbalance in the system. And that instead of basing the efforts of in practice on I should, I must, I ought to, I want to, I have to, instead to let the guiding spirit of our practice be the qualities of mindfulness and wisdom, rather than me. So in the Pali, this is a very long Pali word, Dhamma Anu Dhamma Patipada, practicing Dhamma in accordance with Dhamma. Mostly what we do is practicing Dhamma in accordance with self-view. I'm practicing. I am on retreat. I'm training my mind. I'm improving my meditation. It's and we don't notice that that I am is just a convention of speech, and it becomes based on self-view and ego-centered patterns of thinking. So I feel this is, again, it's a subtle principle, but it makes a huge difference. And that if there can be that sense of direction, the what they call sama sankapo, right intention, right resolution, right aspiration, which is the second factor of the Eightfold Path. If that's not me intending, me choosing, but rather that quality of directionality, the mind guided towards what is wholesome, what is liberating, what is beneficial, and away from what is harmful and destructive and confusing. If that's based on and empowered by mindfulness and wisdom, satipanya, then the result will be peacefulness, will be liberation. Similarly, the effort that we engage in letting go of the unwholesome, cultivating the wholesome, and in terms of concentration, insight, and so on, if that's guided by mindfulness and wisdom rather than me and my practice, then again, the results are much more likely to be that the qualities of peacefulness and liberation. Ajahn Sumedho, in his inimitable way, summed this whole process up, and also in talking about dependent origination as a sort of the fine detail of all of this. The very simple way of recollecting this, and I'll just finish with these words, is if you start off with ignorance, you end up with suffering. If you begin with avijja, like self-view, then you end up with dukkha. If you start off with vijja, with awareness, you end up with nibbana. It's a pocket version. So start off with ignorance, you end up with dukkha. Start off with awareness, with wisdom, you end up with nibbana. So that is a good enough theme or a principle of practice to consider, to take to heart. And we can't just decide, okay, well, I'll never let self-view guide my practice ever again. Ha, ha, ha. We can have that thought, but it doesn't just go away. I think I'd like to learn French. Doesn't just come by wishing it to be there, but we can at least recognize how much the habit of self-view, self-centered thinking influences our sincere and heartful efforts in meditation. And in recognizing how strong the habit is, then the habit can be let go of. So I'll finish my reflections there and hand things over to Ajahn Khemakar to also offer some words for you. Yes. I think this is your microphone. And that's your on-off button.
Can you hear me well? Thank you. Well, I'll start by, this is my first time here at IMS, and I appreciate Ajahn Amaro inviting me to join him at this retreat. I start by saying I remember as a lay woman in late 90s, attending retreats at Amaravati. So I can remember getting in the car and driving down the country roads. And immediately you feel the drive through the country roads, leaving behind the family life and getting that sense of peace that I'm doing something for myself. So I just remembered that today, thinking of what I like to share. It's just having that peace of mind, you know, having the space to leave the family life behind and taking part in retreat. So, talking about retreats, so Buddha was talking about there are four persons in retreats. One who is in retreat in body and in mind. One who is in retreat not in body, but in mind. And one who is in retreat, not in retreat, in body and mind. And one who is in retreat in body and mind. So thinking of these four kinds of persons. So the first one who is in retreat in body. Now, you all have come here to be part of this retreat. It's very conducive environment. Everything is provided. So the bodies, we've taken the body seclusion, the kaya viveka, taking the body away from your normal surroundings. But the mind can still bring the problems. So that's the practice, you know, remembering that though generally we go on retreat to discipline the mind and the body, but though we bring ourselves into the retreat situation, the mind won't get into retreat just like that. So remembering that aspect, putting the effort, and being aware that the mind is still having thoughts of sensual desire, thoughts of ill will, thoughts of cruelty. Just that is the practice, to be aware of that and put in the effort to overcome it. And then we can be in body, we might be in a not retreat situation, not in conducive environment, but still the mind can be in retreat. So having thoughts of renunciation, thoughts of non-ill will, and thoughts of harmlessness. So that's a very good place to be, really, though one has not taken oneself into a retreat mode, but still the mind can get into that place. That takes practice, I suppose. That's the second kind of person. And the third one is not in retreat in both mind and body. So that mainly most of the household life, yes. We don't take time to get into that place, you know, not taking time in daily life to go to a quiet place and find a place in one's own home to take time out from the restlessness and family life. So one is not used to doing it, so the mind doesn't get settled down then. So the mind and body are both in restless and chaotic mood. So the last one being one who is in retreat in mind and body. So that's a very good place to be, like one taking the monastic life or coming on retreat like this. If immediately the mind can be settled down, That's a bonus. So that is taking advantage of this retreat situation, knowing that there is this conducive environment to practice, and putting the effort to overcome any thoughts of sensual desire, thoughts of ill will, and thoughts of cruelty. So the mind can be purified, having thoughts of renunciation, thoughts of non-ill will, and thoughts of harmlessness. So that's the fourth one, which is the best out of the best one. So that's what I believe all of us are trying to do while being on retreat for these 10 days. And you will hear four different voices from this stage, so I'm sure at least something will help in that direction, because there's not only one voice, and something might resonate with you all to be able to make use of this retreat and have that peace of mind and being able to have time for yourself, as well as having space in the mind to investigate whatever that arises in the mind. It's creating space in the mind while on retreat to see how things arise in the mind, how things can cease. So I hope all of you can have a good 10-day retreat and take something, being together as a group, meditating together and making use of this conducive environment at the end of 10 days.
I'd like to invite you all, if you'd like to take a stretch, maybe reach the hands overhead, take a couple of deeper breaths, maybe move your legs a little bit if they're stiff from sitting for so long. Maybe reach up once more and stretch a little bit to either side, or anything that feels like it would be easeful for your body right now. And gently settling back into a posture that feels as comfortable as you can find right now. Settling back into a bit of stillness. And notice where your attention is right now. And in that noticing, notice the quality of awareness, or notice the fact that you are aware in a simple way. You might even, if you wish, you could ask the question, is there awareness or am I aware? It can help kind of turn the mind towards this simple capacity we all have, this quality of mindfulness, awareness. It's right here, right now, isn't it? And so we have this place that we can turn to, tune to, this ability to be present right now, here and now, this quality of present moment awareness. Capacity we all have, don't have to really look hard to find it or fabricate it in the moment. And as Ajahn Amaro was saying, it's a place of, it's a good place. And I think of it in some ways as a kind of place of refuge. When we first sat down and began, Ajahn Amaro spoke about lighting the three candles and a reference to the triple gem, this quality of refuge in Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. We'll be chanting this three times. We go to the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha for a refuge. And if we think even that word refuge, how does that, where does that land in your heart and mind if you think of going somewhere for refuge? When that word comes in my heart, my mind, I think of a place that's kind of safe and secure, a place of rest and ease. And in a way, I think we can see this entire path and this practice as a deepening understanding, refinement of our understanding of refuge. Because in a way, I think we're all looking for something that might serve us as a refuge. You know, I was reflecting before, when we come together like this, and we've come from all our different lives and all the differences there, and some of us are here. Who's here for the very first time at IMS? Yeah, some hands have gone up. Is there anyone who's never meditated before? I mention that just because my first experience of meditation was at a retreat of this length. So it's possible to do that and survive.
Look what happened.
But yes, look what happened. I don't know if this is a good thing or not, Ajahn. But then we've come together and we are creating this marvelous organism, we might call it, of Sangha, through some shared intention. And in my mind, it's some aspiration that got us here. And we all might express it in different ways, but in my mind, it can be seen as this longing for something we might call refuge, a safe place, secure place to rest our mind and heart. And so we'll be talking about this, maybe not using these words that I'm using now, but in a way, we'll be exploring what would it mean, what does it mean to go to the Buddha for refuge? Does that have any meaning for you right now this evening? What does it mean to go to the Dhamma for refuge? What might it mean to go to Sangha for refuge? So we can explore these in lots of ways. We can see Buddha, we go to the Buddha as this example of a possibility for us, of someone who realized peace, freedom, liberation of mind. The root word of Buddha, wakefulness, to be awake. So the Buddha described himself after his enlightenment. Someone spoke to him and asked him who he was, what he was. He said, "I am awake." By the awakened one. We can see that as refuge in a way because we can be awake right now to this moment, just like it is. So that's also points to Dhamma. Dhamma is the teachings, Buddha Dhamma, the teachings of the Buddha, but also Dhamma is nature or reality, or we could say the way it is. So wakefulness, knowing it's like this right now. And Sangha, this quality of connection to our potential to realize what the Buddha taught and a connection to our aspiration, what got us here on retreat, because there is something in common we all share in terms of our wish to be happy, to be at ease, truly at ease, to find something that can serve us as a place of refuge that is independent of the external circumstances that we find in our changing lives. A refuge that can go with us anywhere. Good day, I'm okay. Bad day, I'm okay. That kind of refuge. So the last thing I'll say is it's such an honor and privilege to join you on this retreat and to be part of this teaching team. And I have such great respect for anyone who would undertake this practice. So I just salute you all and welcome you all here. Thank you. Shall I do the next thing? Yeah. Yes. So we're going to try to make this quick, but we have discovered at IMS that it can be really helpful to have a formal way to part with our dear friends, our cell phones, and similar devices. And so we are now going to have a ceremony here. I'll put this basket down in front. And if we could clear this aisle here, so those of you who are sitting on the aisle, maybe move anything that's kind of sticking out into it. And those of you who picked up one of the zipper pouches out there and have your phone with you can come, and we will, if you're willing, Ajahn, ring the bell with each one to signify the way that you can pass the bell to me if you wish. But it's all beings are rejoicing in this renunciation, and we know it's not easy. You know, these are our dear friends, and we spend more time with them often than with anyone else. But we really want to encourage you to be here in the fullness of yourself, and so parting with these devices can be an extremely powerful support for that. If you left it at home, is there anyone who left their phone at home? Or if you've already turned it in, or if you've locked it in a vehicle or put it in a drawer never to turn it on, you can still come up if you wish and do a symbolic offering, a gesture, but you don't have to. So we'll have anyone who wishes, who has their phone and wants to turn it in, can come down this aisle right here in front of Ajahn Amaro and then go out to the sides to return to your place where you're sitting. And we'll ask that it happen, somewhat quickly. So don't come running up, but we don't want to have this drag on too much. And I'll turn this off and put the basket down in front.
Many people live these days with what they call a dispersed identity, so that you don't just exist in your physical body, but you exist in your Instagram account, your WhatsApp account, your Facebook account. We have dispersed identities, and even several identities under pseudonyms of various kinds. And so this is supporting the relinquishing of that dispersal to bring the attention to this physical presence, and then as the retreat goes on, to not just be abiding with this identity, but letting go of this identity too. So we're moving towards that, what they call Sakaya Nirodha, the cessation of identity. So that this is all part of that very significant and liberating process. The Buddha did say that a lay person who realizes this quality of Sakaya Nirodha, there's no difference between their state of liberation and that of a monastic who's been an arahant for 100 years. So that's a booster for the encouragement for the relinquishment process.
So please, please.
So the coming to the last part of the evening, so page 131 in the chanting books is the requesting the refuges and precepts. Just as Greg was eloquently putting it, this isn't just a ceremony with reciting Pali words, but it's a gesture of commitment and inclination towards the refuges, the refuge of the Buddha, choosing to be awake, the refuge of the Dhamma, choosing to be in accordance with reality, with nature, and then refuge in Sangha. I like to think of that as listening to the voice in the heart, that in the heart which loves the good. That is a wonderful, very rarely used word, Synderesis, it's an English word from the Greek, which means the love of the good. And so that refuge in Sangha is that listening to that in the heart which loves the good and responding to that. So page 131, and again, those of you who are familiar with the ceremony of the refuges and precepts, full voice, and then the ones who are less familiar can tag along behind. So the customary way of carrying this out is then to you can use that first form there for a group from a monk, Mayang Bante Ti Saranena Saha Atta Silani Yachama. So that's again, those of you who are familiar with these words, then can recite them with a strong voice, and then after the request, then you can follow line by line with the Namo Tassa and the rest of the refuges and precepts afterwards. So you can begin with bowing three times and then making the request together. So I will recite the Namo Tassa three times. Then after I finish the third time, then all of you are invited to then repeat it three times.
Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa. Buddham saranam gacchami. Dhammam saranam gacchami. Sangham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi buddham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi tamang saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi sanghang saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi tamang saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranam gacchami. Ti sarana kamanang nititang. Panati pata. Vairapmani sikhapadang samadhiyami.
I undertake the precept to refrain from taking the life of any living creature.
Adinadana. Vairapmani sikhapadang samadhiyami.
I undertake the precept to refrain from taking that which is not given.
Abrahmacharya vairapmani sikhapadang samadhiyami.
I undertake the precept to refrain from any intentional sexual activity.
Musavada vairapmani sikhapadang samadhiyami.
I undertake the precept to refrain from lying.
Sura meraya majapamadatana vairapmani sikhapadang samadhiyami.
I undertake the precept to refrain from consuming intoxicating drink and drugs which lead to carelessness.
Vikala bhojana vairapmani sikhapadang samadhiyami.
Vikala bhojana vairapmani sikhapadang
I undertake the precept to refrain from eating at inappropriate times. The next one we'll do bit by bit, the long one. So. Nacha Gita Vadita. Visukadasana. Mala Ganda. Vilepana. Dharana. Mandana. Vibhusanatana. Vairapmani sika padang samadhiyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from entertainment, beautification, and adornment. Ucha sayana maha sayana. Vairapmani sika padang samadhiyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from lying on a high or luxurious sleeping place. Immani atta sikapadani samadhiyami. Imani yata sikapadani silena sugatinyanti silena poga sambara silena nebutinyanti tasama silang viso daye. Very good. I always have the feeling that when the refuges and the precepts have been determined in this way, it's like the ship has slipped its moorings and is off into open water. So welcome aboard the good ship IMS of May 2024. The wording of the fourth precept, I undertake the precept to refrain from lying, of course, and I'm sure the managers have underscored this. This is boosted during these retreat times to be a refraining from speech, unless it's some if it's an interview time or it's some urgent matter with one of the managing team. So this is raised to the quality of noble silence. When Venerable Ajahn Chah was here in 1979, and he was invited to teach on the retreat here, he was very impressed with the level of silence sustained by the retreatants. And he said, quote unquote, "I could never get the monks at Wat Pho Phong to be as quiet as this." So he was very consciously and pointedly impressed by that discipline. And so you can feel a little encouraged in that score. But it is an extraordinarily potent way of helping to keep the attention focused on how the mind is working rather than absorbing into the contents of our mind and believing in the stories. Again, the Sakaya Nirodha, the cessation of identity, letting go of self-view. This one of the ways that we create ourselves and create other people is through our constant conversations and chit-chat and the phones. You know, we create ourselves, we create others through these sort of identity producers. And so that by refraining from speaking, it's not that our ego doesn't have a purpose in nature, and our that is not a, and speech is somehow some kind of infection, not at all. But when we refrain from speaking, we are in a sense helping ourselves to get a perspective on that self-creation and other creation process. And so putting that aside for a period of 10 days to not create yourself. Many of you have been here many times, others of you are here for the first time, and you don't know each other's names. This is a wonderful thing. Just that guy in the blue shirt in the fourth row. That's it. That's all you are. It's like eighth row, fourth cushion, white jacket. That's it. That's your entire presence in the universe. What a relief. Like being on a plane, you're just 15B or 27G. It's nice to not be anybody for a while. So one of the times I spent a lot of... one of the occasions that Greg and I were together extensively was I had a year's sabbatical traveling to the holy places in India and many other places around. Greg and Eric McCord took turns to help me with my travels in India. And when people were asking, what's the purpose of your pilgrimage or your time in India? One of the things I would say is so that I have a break from being Ajahn Amaro. I can just be that some foreign monk. just some foreigner kind of wandering through India with who likes to wear a strange outfit. And not to have to have that identity. And I wasn't pretending to be anybody else, but just not to be in that role, that mode, everywhere you go. So I deliberately didn't stay in any Theravada monasteries. I stayed in Korean monasteries and government rest houses and places. So that a retreat like this is an opportunity to just be blob number 5, row 3. That's all, just to have a break from our absorption in our own stories, our own loves and hates, and our own narrative, to be able to get a perspective upon that. So maybe it's now 12 minutes past 9, so we can close with a final piece of chanting. Let's chant the Brahma Viharas. Do the Pali version. There we are, 42, thank you. So we'll do the Pali version, page 42.
Annamayang chaturapamanyaho basanang karomase Metta sahangatena cetasa hekang disang paritava viharati tata dutiyang data tatiyang data chatu tangitiyo dhammado tiriya sabati sabha tataya sabhavan Lokang metta sahangatena cetasa vipale namahagatena apamanena awe rena hambaya pajena paritava viharati karuna sahangatena cetasa hekang disang paritava via Tita ta dutiyang tata tatiyang tata chatutang ittiyo dhammat tiriyang sabati sabatataya sabhavantang lokang karuna sahangatena cetasa vipulena maha gatena apama nena awe rena hamaya pa jena parita viharati mudita sahangatena cetasa hekang disang paritava viharati tata dutiyang tata tati tata chatutang ittiyo dhammado tir sabati sabatataya sabhavan lokaṃ mudita sahaṅgatena ce tasa vipalena maha gatena apamane na averena hamaya pajena parit Viharati opeka sahangatena che tasa hekang disa paritava viharati tata dutiyang tata tatiyang tata chatutang ityo dhamma tiriyang sabati sabha tataya sabhavan Lokang upeka sahangate na chetasa vipale na maha gate na apamane na avere na hamaya paje na paritava viharati hiti.
And then we'll finish with the closing homage. Which is found on page 16. Do the Pali and English together. Page 16.
Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava, the Lord, the perfectly enlightened and blessed one, Buddhang Bhagavan Tang Abhivademi. I render homage to the Buddha, the blessed one. Svakato Bhagavata Dhammo, the teaching so completely explained by him, Tamang Namasami, I bow to the Dhamma. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho, the blessed ones, disciples who have practiced well, Sangham Namami, I bow to the Sangha.
So I wish you all a restful night and look forward to seeing you all 5:30 in the morning.